Davin's Den is Wrecking Ball Radio.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den, filling in for Coffee Talk. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than uninformed outrage. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt, and as always, I am joined by Joe Curry and Pip Helix. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Got a good show tonight. On the program, we're going to interview security expert and host of the television show Security Brief, Paul Violas. Very excited about that interview. I'm also going to tell you what I discovered ISIS is up to and how they're filling their coffers. Mm. See what it pays when I poke around on the internet.
I know.
And we're also going to tell you how a child's imagination was used against them and how it could get your child suspended.
Wow.
Imagination is a terrible thing to use. I think
I suppose when it's used against you.
Yes. isn't that what the slogan was when we were growing up?
Something similar to that.
Yes. Stop imagining. Be literal. I thought that's what we teach our kids.
Be literal. Don't be artistic.
Right. Okay. So as you guys know, the past couple weeks, I have been working at the Atlantis in the Bahamas.
Yes.
At Joker's Wild. This is my third year doing it. The audience is usually mixed with a lot of tourists and some locals, some local Bahamians. I've never had an issue. I always have a good time. I always have a good time wherever I go. So I have a segment in my act where I talk about how society makes people the wrong heroes.
Okay.
I talk about the Kardashians, the Duggars.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Cosby, mm-hmm. You know, Donald Sterling, you know, all these people that have done horrible, Daniel Snyder, all these people that do horrible things that we put up on a pedestal, and then in reality, you're better off looking up to your military, your firemen, your police.
Teachers.
Teachers, yes. EMT, all those, your parents, all those people are much better role models.
Right.
But So I poke holes at all this. So I say, and I start off with Tiger Woods, because, you know, Tiger fell, of course.
Oh, yeah, he fell a long way from grace.
So and I said, well, you know, I mentioned all these other jobs, and everybody applauds. Yeah, but we don't do that. Who we may make heroes? We make Kim Kardashian a hero.
Yeah.
And we do, and people are like, oh, listen, she's a billionaire, because everybody's watching her TV and buying her products. People are making her a hero.
Whether they should or not,
right.
They are.
She's very influential. So I say, Kim Kardashian has had more black guys in her than the Amistad. And then I explain, I go, the Amistad is a slave ship.
Yes, and?
Well, that's why Kim's famous. I mean, she had the sex video with Ray J.
Right.
That's what started her. She enjoys the company of a lot of African-Americans, which is fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
The whole family does. But she's basically known for being a hoochie mama. I'm not really breaking new ground here with that.
No, that's not news.
No, it's not. It's funny.
Yeah.
But it's not news.
It's dark.
Yes. It is. So in the club, I can see about the first two rows of the audience, the way the lighting is, Joe. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
And then after that, I really can't see anything, regardless of their race or whatever it is. You just can't see because the way the lights blind you. So I don't want people to think, oh, because they're black. No, I just can't see. Nothing like that. So then a guy gets up and goes, I've had enough. And he throws a chair towards the stage.
What?
Joe's giving me a look. Yeah. Throws a chair towards the stage. You go, well, and he starts storming out. I paid for comedy, and this isn't comedy. And as he's storming out, he's going to the service bar where the staff is and where they serve drinks. I go, he goes, this isn't comedy. I go, well, that's not an exit.
Oh, man, you're so lucky he didn't turn around and whack you down.
Well, I'm here to point out things. Joe, don't I point out the obvious?
Yeah.
And then some.
I don't think he paid for comedy. I thought everything was inclusive.
No, it's not. Nothing's inclusive at Atlantis.
That should be their advertisement. Nothing's included in Atlantis.
So now he has to do the long, slow walk about how outraged he is. And this is all awkward and everything. And then he walks out. And then there's these two... I would say senior citizen African-American women who were lovely women. They were having a good time from the beginning of it. And the one woman goes, well, I'm too old to throw a chair. And it was awesome.
That's funny.
And the whole audience cracks up, and I'm laughing. I'm like, that's great. I go, but notice, she didn't say she's too old to shoot somebody. She's packing heat. So everybody's laughing. You know, you kind of, and we've all been privy to this very awkward scene.
Sure.
So outside... He's screaming to the manager about that I'm a racist.
Now, let me just ask you, is this a white guy?
No.
A dark,
no,
black guy?
No, usually whitey gets outraged. But this was a black guy with his black wife from Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, so all right, so that's
but if you live in Savannah, Georgia, no offense to our southern listeners, chances are an African American has encountered real racism.
Real racism.
Yes, they've seen the hanging tree.
They have the Klan down there.
That's
come on.
Said, yeah. So this it's not even a racist joke. So then the other comic is like, well, he's probably a learned man. No. Do you guys know the story of the Amistad?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
what do you mean by a learned man?
Like somebody who's like educated and I don't know what he meant. I don't know what he meant.
Yeah.
But here's the story of the Amistad. The crew of, not the crew, the people in the Amistad, mm-hmm. the Africans, not African Americans.
The Africans
on the Amistad were the Mende. They were captured in Sierra Leone by other Africans, as they were wont to do.
Right.
To sell them into slavery mm-hmm. on a Spanish ship. Headed to America.
Right.
The Mende, it had a stop in Cuba too, but the Mende had a mutiny. They killed everybody mm-hmm. on this slave ship except for the navigator. They said to the navigator, take us home. We want to go back to Africa.
Yeah.
That's pretty reasonable. But the navigator had other ideas. He wanted to take them to America where the ship was supposed to go.
Right.
The ship got intercepted off the coast of Long Island. Joe was there waving hello. So now here was the problem. We had these people. What to do with them? If they're slaves, they're property. But we had outlawed the international slave trade by 1840.
Right.
So the Supreme Court had a rule what to do with these Mende. Are they property? Are they slaves? Or because we've outlawed the international slave trade, even though we had domestic slavery, are they free men?
Right.
So the Supreme Court ruled that they are free men. This is actually a story of Africans empowering, black people empowering themselves, and the Supreme Court, all white at that time, doing the right thing.
For a change.
Yes. So I don't know
why this is racist.
I've never had a problem with that joke before.
No, because most people have an idea what you're talking about.
Yes. And it's about Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
So then the other comic is like, well, you know, why do you try to do stuff to offend people? I'm like, I'm not doing stuff, but I'm not worried about offending people. He's like, well, I just like to make people laugh. I go, that's fine, and that's your choice. If you're talking about things that make you happy, that's fine. I just happen to try to make people laugh and make them think.
Yeah.
You know? My show was described as like by on the first night, this not this night, by having relations with a dry condom. It's going to be good. You're going to enjoy it, but it's going to smart a little.
Who said that?
An audience member who I was talking to after the show, which, by the way, I love that description.
That's great.
And very accurate of my show.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So, Joe, you were more mainstream than you are now. You still talk to a populist, but you're definitely not. You still have a populist message in your act. You're
yes.
not as subversive as I am, but you're not afraid to push some buttons now.
No, and sometimes you have to be prepared to walk that line. And some nights you get a groan, some nights you don't, but you have to have the conviction and belief in your material to make it work, to make that
now,
work.
Here's my point. I could have been saying the N-word for 25 minutes on stage. I wouldn't have.
No.
But I could have said it for 25 minutes on stage. If I was, you could shout me down.
Right.
You could walk out. At no point should you be led to violence.
No.
The only time you should be led to violence is if your basketball team wins a championship. Then we understand. You have to burn your city. We get it.
You have to throw over cars.
Yeah, that goes without saying. You've won. This is how you celebrate. But if we start being afraid of speaking our mind and talking about provocative things in comedy clubs, we lose as a society.
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes I do a joke in my act about the N-word, but I just use the letter. And I talk about Mark Twain, where they want the N-word out of Huckleberry Finn.
Right.
And I use the thing. Well, I've never seen Huck in an Escalade driving around listening to rap music because the N-word is used freely in that, you know. But I walk the line with that, you know, and then, you know, I bring that fact up. That, you know, it's not showing racism. It's the opposite, showing hypocrisy. Sometimes you walk the line with that joke. But I have conviction, and I do feel that, you know, that joke is worth saying because basically it's showing hypocrisy, which children need to learn how indignant that word was. That's why Mark Twain put it in the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, that's just my take on that. I wanted to share that experience with you, that even in paradise, your pal finds problems. Anyway.
That was amazing.
Yeah, of course it was. Listen, you guys are listening to Davin's Den filling in for Coffee Talk. I'm very excited. What coming up after this break, we have a tremendous interview with Paul Violas of the Security Brief. You're going to love this. You're going to stick around. You're going to learn. You're going to be entertained. You are listening to Davins and filling in for Coffee Talk. Don't go anywhere. We are back. You are listening to Davin's Den. I'm very excited about this interview we have coming up. Before, we talked about how I might get banned from another comedy club. Kind of happens to me. We're Davin's Den. We're filling in for Coffee Talk. If you're not used to that by now, then I don't know where you guys have been, because you guys should be paying attention. I'm just trying to find out. I'm going to edit this out in a little later on. Right now, I'm trying to find where I put the interview.
searching. It's behind the can of beans. It's over there.
Right. I'm going to edit all this out. Relax. Nobody's gonna hear this tomorrow. It's not your house. Get out of my pantry.
He's looking through the pantry for the interview. All
right. That's not what this is. Now I'm going to do the professional intro to it. That's all going to get edited out.
Okay.
Because I'm smooth.
Like butter.
Like butter. Like congealed. almost like there's something wrong with me and I'm sitting on a couch.
It's behind the beans.
Yeah, got to hear what that was about.
Later. All right. Very excited. Earlier in the day, I spoke with Paul Violas of the Security Brief. This is his new television show. This man's been a security expert for 35 years. This is who all the people go to when they want to get information about how to keep themselves safe, whether it be online or in their real life. So mm-hmm. We were thrilled that Paul would take some time out of his day to talk with us. So you guys are going to enjoy this. We're going to do part one now and part two when we come back from our break. So hang tight.
We are joined by security expert and
host of the television show, The Security Brief, Paul Violas. Paul, thank you for joining the Den today. How are you?
Oh, Davin, doing great, and privileged to be here. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule, because you're known as an expert in cybersecurity, extortion, stalking, family protection, and workplace violence. Most people specialize in one or two of these areas. Somehow you've managed to specialize in all these things. How did you become so diverse?
Well, you know what, Davin, it really just circles around the fact that I concentrated my career on the behavioral analysis side of law enforcement, so that really kind of works into the crimes that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
When you start analyzing the psychological portion of the intent behind the crime, that kind of leads you into those areas.
So you would take case studies of people who perpetrated crimes and go from there?
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I learned very early on in my career, about 35 years now, is the more you listen to the people you arrest, the more they'll tell you about themselves and the more they'll tell you why they did it. And I learned that early on, and using that as a benchmark between my work and scholastically as I went through school, I started to develop a pattern where that I was able to create more of a behavioral profile of certain individuals where that you had predictive actions, where that once you were interviewing certain people, you could pretty much lay out what you could expect,
mm-hmm.
as well as a line of questioning to bring about more truth more expeditiously.
So criminals tend to have a certain behavioral pattern that that varies individually, but it's fairly universal generally.
No question about that. And, you know, when you start looking at the various crimes that from a violent perspective, even when you take a look at extortion, people that perpetrate that act really fit a certain mold, you know, and they have a certain agenda. Even though there may be two or three different silos of perpetrators, they fit a certain mold. So once you're in it, once you understand that, you can interview a victim and you know the correct questions to ask so as to clearly illustrate who you should be looking for in their lives, or somebody that may be collateral to their lives.
Okay, so somebody stalked you, you get certain information about the people in their lives, then you could go, all right, it's either this person over there or possibly that person over there, and that's where you begin your investigation.
Correct. So, for example, we just closed an extortion matter not too long ago, and the client was or is a very successful hedge fund manager. As we started to diagnose the letters that were being sent and the emails that were being sent, to me it was apparent that it was someone that was once affiliated with him in business.
Okay.
Where he was thinking more in another direction.
Right.
As we drilled down on this, it was apparent to me he wasn't telling me the truth at first. And sooner or later, it took a little bit of time, but he finally expressed to me that, you know, early on in his career, he had done certain things where he fractured a couple of laws, and this guy knew about it.
So payback, or it sounds like we're talking about extortion.
Right. And they now, when they split, the reason why the client wasn't thinking of him was when they separated company, they separated in a very amicable way, and they stayed very good friends for years later. Now you turn the clock forward about 20 years, that other person fell on financial hard times and became nearly penniless. Even though it wasn't my client's fault, he blamed him for his lot in life and then came back and said, you know what, you owe me money, so this is the best way that I'm going to get my money out of you.
Interesting, and the client never even considered that.
No, and once we identified him, we were able to sit down with this guy and have a little Ghost of Christmas Future conversation to illustrate what his future was going to look like if he pursued. So we were able to make that go away, which the client was pretty happy about.
What do you think, in 2015, what do you think the danger is that it affects most people? Is it stalking? Is it cybersecurity? Cyber?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. And you know what's fascinating, Davin, is that, I mean, I've been in the criminal justice system for, well, like I said, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a monumentous evolution of how we've had to grapple with things then and how we grapple with things now. And, you know, it's just amazing when you think of the business model of the cyber criminal has developed and how wide-ranging the victim base is. It's just, it's amazing when you look at it, as well as the actors that are involved in it. So I think as we continue to move forward, what we saw in 2015, we're going to continue to see in 2016 going forward, but we saw, you know, a number of major entities in the private sector and the public sector were attacked and vital information was stolen.
Right.
Right. Right. You know, so we're going to continue to see that because it showcases our vulnerability.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I've gone on the record in saying that we're just seeing the beginning of this, and there's really no way to really protect ourselves because every time we get the latest and greatest security, there's hackers out there who are trying to break it and infiltrate it because that's what they do. It's really cat and mouse, isn't it?
No, it really is. But, you know, it's a fascinating point you bring up because one of the things that we can do, which is why we've been really blessed with the TV show, is that we built it around solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that people specifically today can empower themselves with is a little bit more education to make themselves a more difficult target.
Right.
Because when you understand the mantra that I use is called negative migration.
Mm-hmm.
Negative behavior migrates to the path of least resistance. So if you and I are both sitting in the Delta Sky Club someplace and you have an encrypted laptop and I don't, and there's a hacker that decided to buy a ticket to hack into a bunch of computers that day, he's going to try to get into both of ours. You have encryption, I don't. He's not going to spend more than 2 seconds trying to get into yours because he'll just go to mine.
Right.
And what people the message behind the risk from cybercrime is to make it more difficult for people for these hackers to get into your home and to get into your devices, and you can protect yourself. Absent that, it's a feeding frenzy.
You are listening to Davin's Den. We are talking to Paul Violas, security expert and host of the television show The Security Brief. Paul, so you talked about characteristics that criminals have, that you've seen a pattern, certain character traits. Are there characteristics that victims have?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, which is why oftentimes they're hunted by certain, like, prey. By certain perpetrators. And what comes to mind right off the bat, as you think of domestic violence victims, you know, God bless them, but domestic violence victims have certain behavioral traits that make them much more vulnerable to that domestic violence batterer. And that's why the batterer seeks out victims such as that, because they know that they can get in that life they can manipulate and control that life, and sooner or later they can just completely take over that particular person.
Are we talking about people with low self-esteem, come from bad families, daddy issues? What are some of these characteristics that if one of these people's listening needs to be mindful of so that they can try to correct this?
Oftentimes, yes, very much low self-esteem, but also overly nurturing, feeling that they need to take care of somebody.
The usual, I think I can change him, he's a bad boy, but I can change him, that type of thing?
Exactly. And someone that really has a deep, burning desire to be loved and comes from a place where, you know, they're willing to sacrifice what they need to sacrifice so that they can get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the batterer will see that in that person and control that person to the point where they begin to isolate them from their friends and family. And once they isolate them from friends and family, they make them feel that they're the only ones that can really ever love them. No one else will love them like that particular person. So as to develop a sense of dependency. So with isolation and dependency then comes complete control, which is when that particular batterer to the victim will tell them where to go, where they can go, where they can't go, who they can see, who they shouldn't see, who they can't see, and actually monitor their daily activity. So, yeah, the victim certainly has certain behaviors that make them more vulnerable as prey to the batterer or to an intruder.
Does that hold true for victims, and whether they be individuals or companies of cybersecurity? You see certain traits that a lot of those victims have in common?
Oh, absolutely. And when we think about that, when you think about the individual with respect to cyber, it really comes down to this sense of security. And mm-hmm. security is such a relative term because we oftentimes feel that we convince ourselves to live with a feeling, a false sense of security. Like, no one really knows who I am. Is this really going to happen to me? And once it finally happens, it's a game changer. But most people live with that. I really don't think it'll ever happen to me. Corporations, by the same token, have a very clear DNA with respect to how they protect their data. Most corporations don't embrace a cyber component to their internal IT. And what I mean by that is IT is one of the most valuable parts of any business for its operation. But you got to admit, Davin, with all your knowledge in this area, IT, the internet, this was created for connectivity and speed and convenience.
Right.
It was not created with security in mind. Security was an add-on.
I liken the internet to the Industrial Revolution. Because
yes.
We built all these machines to make things, and people got hurt because we hadn't thought of safety. I agree with you here. I think the internet is the same thing.
I could not. What a fabulous analogy. There's no question about
Thank
that.
You.
And you could not be more accurate with that, because we just don't get it right now with respect to how vulnerable you are, which is why corporations absolutely need to incorporate that cybersecurity component to their IT infrastructure. And what I mean by that is cyber is an anti-crime approach. And with corporations embracing the need to do basic vulnerability assessments, they can preemptively identify from an anti-crime approach, not an IT approach,
mm-hmm.
where criminals are going to get in, and then they can seal those and move forward. Absent that, you play the response game. It's pretty ugly.
Oh, we agree with you 100% on the show. We've actually had what they call ethical hackers on the show, whose job it is to do exactly what you're describing, try to, you know, with the company's permission, try to break in and find their vulnerabilities. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, we do it all the time. We probably do maybe more than at least a dozen or more high-scale penetration tests a month.
Wow.
Yeah, so and you're doing it in a very safe way, but you're also illustrating that – hey, this is where you're weak.
What do you...
That's why one of the other campaigns that's really important for companies to embrace, and we do a bunch of this, is making sure that your employees do not become victim to phishing scams.
And the way to do that, of course, is they open up an email
from
their work email, they click on a link, and away we go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, there's software today, and we do, again, quite a bit of this, where you can train staff by sending out targeted emails to see if they open them.
Interesting. Now, you say we. What? Who's this we? Do you have a company?
Our firm. My firm. Violas Group International.
Violas Group International.
Cyber division.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's a really good exercise because once you do that, and I'll just tell you really quick here.
Mm-hmm.
So we just finished with a company in the Midwest, and the CEO had heard me speak at a conference. So I really want to try this out.
Mm-hmm.
So we spoke with the head of IT. We told her what we were going to do. So, you know, she was on board. And it was funny because, you know, she cautioned and said, she said, listen, we train our people, you know, yearly on this. I don't think we need to do this. But the boss wants it done, so we're going to do it. I said, okay. So we picked a targeted 100 people out of there, a little over 800 people. And we just targeted 100 people. And we sent them a fake email with an embedded code inside an attachment. And within 72 hours, 48% of the people opened it up.
Wow.
Right. Clicked on the attachment, which means 48 workstations are compromised, which means that the code, if it was malicious, is then going to carry to the server and promote data loss.
You're going to cripple a company that way.
That's how quickly you do it. So that's wow. Why these preemptive phishing evaluations allow senior executives to see just how vulnerable they are, as well as identify where the point of vulnerability is inside the corporation from a training perspective.
What do you think of these hacking groups like Anonymous? What do you think of them?
You know, I look at groups like that, right? And you know, it's a shame because you're really talking about brilliant minds.
Some of the best.
I'm sorry?
I said I would argue some of the best with what they do.
Yeah, I mean, they're brilliant minds. And if only they could be used for good, then, you know, I think we'd all be in such a much better place.
But couldn't you argue that they are using for good? I mean, they're going to attack ISIS right now. Isn't that good?
Oh, no, I think so. And, you know, but what I meant by that is if we had minds like that who were on the government payroll, you know, OPM probably wouldn't have been hit.
Don't we have those minds? I mean, don't we have some of the best minds?
I think we've got good minds. I think we've got some great minds, but I think you've got people sitting in groups like Anonymous that are, you know, the best of the best.
Well, I think probably, I mean, you would know better than I because the way you can profile people from interviews, but I think probably a lot of these people are people that do not like to work within organizations or groups. They're kind of lone wolf type of people. Yeah. So, I mean,
they're in their basement.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So even if we offered them, you know, 6, 7, 8 figures a year to work for the government, they might not survive or succeed in that type of environment.
I have no doubt about that. I look at, when you talk about a group like Anonymous, the first thing comes to my mind is just the brilliance and the intellect and the vision, the forward thinking of a group like that, that constantly stays vigilant on what the risks are. So always admire intellect.
It seems like they can do things that legally we couldn't, which gives them an advantage. And listen, the thing is this is social justice, but social justice can get blurry. We all like that they're attacking ISIS, but then they, you know, they revealed the names for Ashley Madison, and, you know, was that right or wrong? I mean, it gets kind of blurry when you're working outside of the framework of.
Right. Well, you know, when you don't have a playbook to go by, you pretty much make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ashley Madison thing, I thought was, I hate to say this, Davin, God forgive me, but I thought that was pretty hysterical.
Well, I assume you were not one of the clients then, if you were laughing.
I wasn't one of the clients. I did have a number of the clients become our clients, though, so that.
Really? So we've talked about the Ashley Madison situation.
Oh, man, are you kidding me?
So what were those conversations like? I don't want you to name names, although they're out there. What were those conversations when you get these hysterical?
Are you kidding me? They were hysterical. Oh, my God. You know, you get the guy who calls and says, look, you know, this thing came out, this Ashley Madison thing, and I've never done anything, of course, and I certainly am not a member. I would just like to see if people are, you know, if my name's on it. No, this is an actual conversation. I said to the guy, I said, well, I mean, we can do this, right? We can do this through we have a cyber threat analysis piece that we can get him that information. So I said, but if you want me, it's going to cost X, and it's expensive. So if you're certain you've never belonged to that, I really, in good conscience, I can't take your money to do this.
Right.
You know, because it's unethical. And he says, well, you know, I mean, I may have clicked on it once. I mean, I don't know. And wow. So, okay, yeah, sure, that's okay. But we had probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 calls on that about asking to see if we could validate if their names were being exposed.
Wow. We are talking with Paul Violas of the Security Brief. We are finding out all sorts of fascinating security issues and about some paranoid people from Ashley Madison who did nothing wrong at all. So, Paul, I'm blown away
no,
by that.
I'm laughing. I'm sorry, David. I just think it's hysterical.
I mean, because what do they think? But even if their name is on that list, there's nothing you can do. It's
of
not.
Of course not.
It's not like you can redact it. I mean, it's out there.
I think they were looking for preemptive intelligence. You know,
they were going to buy their wife a lot of roses ahead of time.
Right? Do I go tell my wife? Women were treated so much better when Ashley Madison, the guys from Ashley Madison, got in out. You know,
so anonymous once again, heroes.
Guys, right? You got all these guilty guys showering their wives with affection and attention.
Wow!
I thought it was hysterical. You know, listen. The funny part about it is. You got somebody who wants to go cheat on their wife. Okay, so they go to cheat on their wife, so they go to a website. They go to a website, and they post their picture. I'm married. I want to cheat on my wife. Are you available? And you think that's confidential.
Well, that goes to that false sense of security that you just spoke of, Paul.
Oh, my God. Well, Davin, with all due respect, that passes that. That goes to stupidity 101.
Well, I mean, listen, men in the mood often think with the wrong head. I will just
good
leave
Lord,
it there.
But you know what, though? Hey, you know what? Women were on that list, too.
Yes, not a lot, though. Not a lot, unfortunately, for the fellas. It was mostly dudes.
Women are typically smarter than men anyway, so.
Oh, I'm not going to agree with that.
I got to tell you, I see some of the decisions men make, and I shake my head like, really?
Yeah, we do make a lot of. All right, that was part one of our interview with Paul Violas of the Security Brief. You are listening to Davin's Den. Don't go anywhere. We're filling in for Coffee Talk, of course. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to have part two of the interview with Paul Violas of TV's The Security Brief. And we are back. You are listening to Davin's End, filling in for Coffee Talk this week. Happy to do so. You just heard us part one of our interview with the Security Brief's own Paul Violas. Fascinating stuff. Really, really good stuff. We're going to play part two of that interview right now. So what are some tips, Paul, that you could give to our listeners where they could protect themselves or their business online, where they could just be a little bit safer?
Excellent. Well, the key thing to remember is that to protect yourself at home. And if you're going to be communicating sensitive data from home, and it really all comes down to how you communicate data. So if you're going to communicate sensitive data, if you're going to bank online, if you're going to send, you know, financial information, legal information, health information, anything you wouldn't want anyone else to come in contact with, it's important to make sure the machine that you use at home has an appropriate level of encryption. This is not difficult to do. There are cybersecurity companies all over the place that you can retain to harden the device. Now, some people say, well, if my machine gets compromised, it's less expensive for me just to transfer my data to a brand new machine. Wrong. The code is embedded in the file itself. So all you're doing is transferring the infection to another cut. That doesn't help. The solution is to make sure that the machine itself, the desktop and or laptop, are appropriately encrypted. That encryption will assist you will protect you from being hacked. And it's a very simple process.
But now, wait a minute. But these banks, now this will make you safer, I agree. But these banks and the Pentagon, they're supposed to have this great encryption too, and they still get hacked. I mean, is anything foolproof?
Well, nothing is foolproof, and no one can create something that's impenetrable, Dad. No one. And that's why when we look at this, we say, all right, okay, so what's the solution? The solution is we can only do what we're empowered to do to protect ourselves.
Right.
If you're banking at XYZ Bank and they get hit, you can't do anything about that. The probability of banks getting hit where that internal information, not external, but internal walls of information are compromised is very slim. Have banks been popped? Yes, but not to the extent where that interior wall, where your financial information has been compromised. It can happen, but it's a low probability. The higher probability is someone attacking you. That's why making sure you upload the appropriate level of encryption, you're protecting yourself.
Okay.
If you're going to travel, stay the hell off of secured wireless. Right next to Jumbo Shrimp, it's the greatest oxymoron of all time. I swear, Davin, there's nothing secure about secured wireless. So you want to make sure, again, if you're going to travel mm-hmm. and you've got important information, make sure you encrypt your laptop. You can also upload disk-level encryption into your laptop, hence hardening and fortifying the information for that data at motion and data at rest, so you're protecting yourself. Very simple, cost-effective, keeps you safe.
What's something like this cost? Like, where does somebody find something like this? How much does this cost?
Yeah, so it's not, you know, it's going to vary based on the type of information, the type of machine, as well as the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
But the simplest way for anyone to really get a quote is just look up in your area the companies that specialize in cybersecurity.
Okay.
Okay, it's that simple. And then contact them, ask them what their credentials are. They will all have solid credentials. One of the things that you should always look for is the people you're dealing with should be recognized, preferably by either a state and or federal court, as expert witnesses in cybercrime.
Interesting.
That is really the credential you always want to go for in this. But it's simple. It's cost-effective. It's easy for companies. And the biggest thing, here's the biggest mistake people make with companies. And again, I say this real quickly, Davin. I am a huge IT fan. Love IT. They're great. Nobody, especially any CEO like myself, wants to come to work and have their head of IT say, hey, we're down. God forbid, right?
Right.
I mean, you come in, there's no internet. It's like, you know, we're all on crack. You start shaking. Oh, my God. I can't connect on the internet.
You got to go home. It's like they cut the power.
Oh, my God. Well, I can't function, right? So I get it. And IT is critical. But at the end of the day, corporations absolutely must incorporate, and they don't have to hire them. It's a one-shot deal. Really, you need to keep them around. But from an anti-crime perspective, a cybersecurity assessment, a vulnerability assessment, will give you outside eyes that are accustomed, from an anti-crime approach, to looking at how criminals are getting in. It will also have an advanced manner in which to detect advanced malicious code.
Mm-hmm.
So that if it's in your machine, typical IT scans aren't picking it up. The cybercrime expert will be able to pick that up
and
remove those.
So stuff that your Symantec and Norton can't even find, they
Correct.
Can find.
Right. And again, and you said it, and you know, completely on point earlier, is that, you know, what we protect from today, there's another risk tomorrow.
Right.
Right? Which is why, believe it or not, I mean, I was sitting in the waiting room with my grandson, at a doctor's appointment, and at his doctor's appointment, and we're just playing around, and I started, you know, looking up some of the brochures. There's nothing else to do, right? And I'm looking up this thing, you know, the importance of annual checkups, and then I started thinking, wait a second. So shortly after that, we started something called a annual cyber health exam,
mm-hmm.
and it's become, believe it or not, it's become like one of the biggest parts of the biggest part of our cyber practice.
Wow.
Our, you know, annual cyber exams for our clients to make sure that they're still good. So, but from a corporate perspective, an exterior vulnerability assessment is critical. You've got to do it. There's no way around it. If you get hit, you got to pick up the phone and call all your clients and say, hey, I don't think you want to do that.
Yeah, because then they're wondering, who the heck are we doing business with that they got hit? They think, you know, that you're not doing the best you can do to protect yourself and them.
Exactly, and you'd be, Davin, I swear, my hand to God, you'd be surprised at how many professional firms, CPA firms, law firms, that house your critical information are poorly protected.
No, they don't, because they don't think of it.
because they take it for granted, like we all do. Like, you know, we get on a plane and think we're perfectly safe until we're not. It's, you know, it's everything like that.
Right. So that's really the best advice. The two ways, they're very simple, mm-hmm. very cost-effective ways to protect both the individual and the company.
Sounds good to me. All right. Let's talk about your television show, Mr. Violas. So
yeah, I got to tell you, what a blessing that is. To say that it came out of nowhere is an understatement,
uh-huh.
right? But it's I'm having the most fun I've had in my life. I'm working with the best people. Terry Murphy and Patrick Murphy, our executive producers, put together
mm-hmm.
A 90-person crew. We tape over at live studio audience every Thursday and Friday. We tape over at the Metropolis Studios, 106 in Park.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, Devin? It's such a privilege because it's been labeled. I mean, all the hype just came out. We just got picked up for national syndication. All the press releases are coming out now. And the real fascinating part about it is that it's being labeled as the Dateline of Daytime, which is, you know, hasn't even really aired yet, and it's already been labeled like that.
But that's why I wanted to ask you about that. Why do you think now is a time, is it happening where we have our first daytime talker focused solely on crime? Because Oprah covers it here and there, and Dr. Phil covers it here and there. But why now? What do you think's going on now that made this happen?
What a great question. I think because, and empirically, the fact is that we know that all the studies across the country show that the number one subject that Americans want to hear about is crime. And they, looking at evening shows, you look at all the great shows out there, they all circle around crime. But it's never been approached in a daytime talk show. Terry Murphy created this where that we have taken that Dateline look, feel, information, and put it into daytime. But the difference between us and a daytime is the fact that we provide doable, and you know this, solutions
mm-hmm.
for every single crime that we discuss in every episode. We use the powers of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We use our website to become an actual, we have it, it's in our toolkit on our website, securitybrieftv.com. And after every episode, you can go to the website and you can use it as an information source to learn how to protect yourself from being a victim. If you are a victim, here are resources and options you can use to assist you to get out of that. All of the information you need to protect yourself will live and breathe on that website in addition to us broadcasting it. So I think it's just a great opportunity.
So take me through what a typical episode. I'm tuning in. I've never heard of this. It's on my television. What's a typical episode of the Security Brief going to be like for the viewer?
Well, okay. So the one that kind of sticks off the top of my head, and one of the things, too, is that, you know, I do stay in touch with the victims that we have on the show, which is also has been a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So the one, I just spoke with one of the victims earlier today, and we did their show some time ago. It's going to be airing pretty soon, I think, at the end of December. But it was a show about black women in the early 60s, and they, believe it or not, it's a story that's titled Missing Babies, Stolen at Birth.
Mm-hmm.
And these women were going to hospitals, which is deplorable, where they weren't accepted into quote-unquote white hospitals, which makes me sick,
right?
And sent to other hospitals. And then once the baby was born, they were told the baby died. When, in fact, they didn't die, they were sold.
What?
Correct.
Wait, this happened in our country like 50 years ago?
That's correct.
Wow.
So, and I'm not going to give you too much in this, Devin, because I want you to watch the show.
Oh, Paul, you tease you.
I had to do it. I had to do it. So the show starts out with they use what's referred to as a halo effect. So I'm in a dark set,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a light coming right on me. And I really give this cold opening on what we're going to be talking about. You know, stolen at birth, 9 women, hundreds of victims, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that leads us into kind of that broader picture. Get the music intro, the little background. And then it comes out with, you know, I've got my guest. And then we start talking and the interview goes. And we break it down by segment so that we allow our viewers to learn about the crime as it's being committed.
Mm-hmm.
So that piece by piece, and then we close it up after maybe three or four segments, we will close up that crime and we present the solution. We present what the call to action is. Like in this particular case, we present a call to action where I'm saying, you may be one of these children. And, you know, we get involved in that so deeply so that when we finish that segment, we've got something on the plate that tells our viewers, here's how you can make your life better. If you want to get involved in this, this is how you can get involved. And then we shift more to that educational component. So we'll have experts to come in to talk about
mm-hmm.
in this particular subject. It could be a variety of different things. Legal experts, health experts, family experts, all designed to teach and to provide educational information to our audience.
Here's what I
close up with a couple of segments which are really great, mm-hmm. where our producers and our branding segments come up with. We've started Criminology 101, which is a talk show segment, which is hysterical.
Okay.
I've got a dear friend of mine, Chuck Nice. He's one of the greatest comedians in America.
I know Chuck. I don't know him personally, but I know him. We've played some of the same places, sure.
Chuck is great. Mm-hmm. But Davin, so he comes on, and Chuck co-presents with me
mm-hmm.
every Friday, and we do a segment called Moron of the Week.
Okay.
And Moron of the Week are three different guys, people, that are criminals, that have done things so stupid and so ridiculous, you just have to shake your head and laugh.
Right.
And it's actually quite comical. So then we vote on who the moron of the week is. But it's a really diverse show. It's solution-based. It's powerful. It's empowering. It's passionate. You'll keep a box of tissues by sometimes, and then sometimes you'll be laughing hysterically. But the one thing about the show that I can say unequivocally is that there's nothing else like it. And the best reward that we will get from it
mm-hmm.
will be the amount of lives, God willing, that we will impact in a positive way and provide positive, productive information to keep them safe, which is why we call it, you know, the Security Brief with Paul Violas, keeping America's family safe.
You are listening to Davin Zed. Of course, we are talking to Paul Violas of the Security Brief, the television show, and the security expert. Paul, I just wanted to say, because I did have the privilege of being a guest on one of your shows as an expert, and what really struck me about your show, which is what I like about it, and which is why I completely support it, is
Thank you. You're
welcome. A lot of these shows, they do good, but often I watch them and I almost feel like the victims are kind of exploited, and you know, it's kind of like, ha ha, point your finger at them, how could you be so foolish, that type of thing. Like, I watch a lot of these shows and I felt a little dirty, and I didn't feel that way when I was watching you work with the victims. I just got to give you credit for that. It felt like there was a concern, a caring, and a non-judgmental feel, which I really appreciated.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Dan, coming from you especially. You know, it's so important to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of, you know, the greats like, you know, a Phil Donahue or an Oprah that really know how to tell the story.
Right.
So when I think of my responsibility to the show, to our viewers, to America, to everyone outside the country that I watch the show, you know, my job is to do just that, Devin. It's to tell the story with honesty,
mm-hmm.
Without regard to politics, and truthfulness, and mostly with compassion, right? We've done some shows where people were, I mean, have you ever heard of the crime sextortion?
I have not heard of it, but I'm sure.
I didn't either.
It sounds like something, you know, where somebody's doing us favors and then they're extorted for doing those favors? Or?
Yeah, you know what it is? It's sextortion is where people actually hack into people's computers and take videos of them, or former boyfriends and girlfriends will take videos unbeknownst to the former person and sell them. And it's just a horrible thing.
We've actually dealt with that on our show with the internet scammers, the African scammers and European scammers.
Of Nigeria?
Yeah, from Western Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Benin Republic, and also Eastern Europe. Anywhere, actually, we've actually dealt with that thing. I just didn't know the name for it. I like that. It's sextortion. I like it.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because you made me think of what you just said, because we got some comments back on social media, and I try to respond to everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I do. although I'm told, because right, I'm still learning, so although I'm told that once the show launches, I'm not going to be able to respond to everybody.
No, you'll have somebody who signs your name for you. You'll be fine.
We'll see what that happens. But this one guy wrote in, and he was really powerful. He wrote in and he said, you know, I saw your show. This is when we were up on Reels. And he said, I saw you, this show, and I can't believe that you were being nice to this woman. How stupid could she be? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like there was like blood in the water about, you know, you should chastise her and re-victimize her.
There's a lot of victim shaming. There's a lot of holier-than-thou attitude out there.
I don't like that.
No, but I've seen that too. That's one of the reasons why victims tend not to come forward. Victims of crime, they feel bad enough, and they feel ashamed enough that they did something foolish or stupid in their eyes, and they don't want to tell family and friends, let alone strangers. That's why a lot of crimes don't get reported, whether it be rape or scamming or any other type of crime. It doesn't get reported because people feel bad, and that person is a perfect example, the one who wrote you that.
Right, exactly. And you know what? No one is a good enough human being to judge or condemn somebody else.
I'm pretty good, Paul. I'm pretty good. I think I can.
Well, you're close.
Okay.
You are there. But, you know, so that's how I look at it. And what I tell all of the victims that come on the show, and I have perpetrators that come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I had two people come on the show. A woman, we called it, the title of the show is Left for Dead. She was the victim of a carjacking, and the guy actually put a gun to her head and shot her in the head.
Ugh.
No, she lives.
Yeah, but still, ugh.
But, right, all right. By the grace of God, she lives.
Right.
And this guy goes to prison. They end up, actually, because she wanted to forgive him, and she writes him on Facebook, or not Facebook, writes him in the prison. He gets released. He's now a minister. They get together. Now they tour nationally. But.
Oh, well, you know what? Hey, good for her. Glad it worked out. I can't imagine myself ever being that person, but good for her.
I said to her, with him there, listen, this woman's amazing, because I wouldn't have forgiven her.
No, I mean, that's, well,
I'm not that good of a person.
But we hear stories about that when we had those shootings over the summer in the church where the victims were forgiving
South
the kid.
Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at that and you go, wow, those are some really spectacular people. I mean, you got to admire that.
I do admire them. I do. I'm not that good of a person.
No, neither am I. I'm good.
Yeah.
Not that good. Not that
I'm
good
not
at all.
That good. I'm not even in that category. Yeah.
So what have you learned? Because you're a security expert. But what have you learned about crime and the victims since you started doing the security brief? Because like you mentioned, you had a run. You guys started out on cable, and then because of the buzz and what you were doing, you got syndicated. But so you have a lot of shows underneath your belt already. What have you learned?
Davin, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I learn every single day in every episode from every victim. I've learned more stories of compassion and strength and resolve and goodness of heart. I've seen the inside of people that are criminals. I've seen guys that have and spoken with individuals mm-hmm. that are in prison, interviewed them in prison, that have killed their parents. I've seen the core of crime that I'd never seen before after 35 years in the business. And I think it's probably one of the most poignant questions, if not the most poignant question I've ever been asked since we started the show. And the best answer to that is I've learned the very core of crime. And I've become a student as well as a teacher on the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that.
Well, Paul, where and when can people tune into the security brief?
The show is going to be launching nationally on stations all over the United States beginning December 21st.
Okay.
Right now, we are, I can say this because the press release came out, we have been picked up for syndication for an initial test with the Sinclair Group, mm-hmm. great group of people. And there are a number of other groups that are in discussion that over the next – probably 5 business days, there will be 2 different press releases coming out announcing other station groups and the larger reach that the security brief will have across the United States as well as in other countries.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so the only thing I could ask, Davin, is if you keep this in mind, if your listeners could hit our website at securitybrieftv.com, we'll be posting there where the show is going to be coming up live, and there'll be a lot of promotion starting December 1st. So we're very blessed, and God willing, it's gonna make it and be around for a while.
Excellent. And where can people learn more about yourself and security tips? Where can the people get that stuff?
You can always go to my website, which is violis.com, V-I-O-L-L-I-S, violis.com, about me and about what we do, as well as my podcast and all the subjects that we have there. And the library is our information library is there. So between the toolkit at securitybrieftv.com and the library at violis.com.
And that was our interview with Paul Violis of the Security Brief. That was just a small portion of it. If you want to hear the full interview that we did on the internet, go to davinsden.com and go to the podcast. And it's the November 17th, 2015 show. You can hear the full show and, of course, on iHeartRadio and iTunes and all those good places. So we appreciate Paul spending some time with us. But we got some more show to go, so don't go anywhere. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what ISIS is up to and how they're filling their coffers and why you should be concerned. And later on, we are going to tell you how your kid's imagination can get him suspended. You are listening to Davin's Den, filling in for Coffee Talk. And we are back. You are listening to Davin's Den, filling in for Coffee Talk. We hope you are having a wonderful day. We are enjoying being with you. So, as I told you before we went away on our last break, I've discovered some stuff that ICE has been up to. And believe it or not, Pip and Joe, it is not good.
you don't say.
It is really? Not nice.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Do tell.
Not a tea party?
It's not a tea party. Not even the tea party that's in our country. It's worse than that,
no.
In my humble opinion.
No.
Yes, yes, yes. So as you folks know, 2009, I did a tour overseas to entertain our troops. One of the places I went to while I was in Iraq was Mosul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where I met some soldiers. I became friends with some of those soldiers on Facebook. Talk periodically. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Of course, now you know that Mosul is now controlled by ISIS.
Yes.
That's not so cool.
No.
So, one of my friends, female soldier, she wants to post some pictures on Facebook from her time in Mosul.
Right.
So she's posting some pictures. Fine. What she does then is she tags the city of Mosul.
Okay.
Do you know what that means when they tag some?
Yeah, hashtag. And
no,
then
no, not hashtag.
Oh.
Like they type in Mosul, and then if I want to tag you in a comment, I said hanging out with Pip Helix, and then Pip Helix highlights, and then you see it on your wall.
Oh, right.
So something like that. So she does that with Mosul, so now it's on Mosul's wall.
Okay.
That's not funny.
I know, because guess who's living in Mosul now?
Yeah.
Nobody you want to be neighbors with.
Right.
Oopsie.
So I send her a little private message. I go, hey, now. You might not want to do that. I would take it down. She doesn't respond. Typical woman doesn't respond to me. Sure enough, I check back a couple of days, and they've defamed her picture. But that goes without saying.
Oh, oops.
Yeah, but whatever. Whatever. You know, that. What? Who knows? But what people don't understand is you have to keep in mind, ISIS has already said we are going to try to kill American soldiers in the homeland.
Right.
So you are leading them back to your Facebook page. So they are now seeing pictures of you, because I don't know if she has all the... Probably does not have all the security settings if she's doing that. So they can see where she lives, they can see what the kids look like, what she's doing.
Oh, Jesus.
And, you know, who knows what operatives they have hanging out in this country.
Right, really not thinking it through.
No, so she has opened herself up to that. She's not practicing good operational security, OPSEC, as they say. So I go poking. That's the word. I go poking around on the Mosul page because I want to see who's hanging out there.
Yeah.
I want to see what little ISIS people I can find.
Who's standing on the street corner?
Sure enough, as luck would have it, I find at the very least an ISIS sympathizer.
Oops.
Yeah. So we're friends. No. No, so I go poking around on his page because he doesn't have it buttoned up. He lives in South Africa, so they might want to be aware. So he's got posted on his website
He goes, this is the latest that the Islamic State has been doing. And there are all these, all this credit card information.
Oh.
Passwords, names, all the security expiration dates of Iranians.
Wow.
Well, remember, though, Iran is fighting ISIS in Syria.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, so that they're the ones who are going after them in Syria. So they, there's about 300, he says. 300
Iranian
victim.
Information or
yeah.
identity theft victims.
Right. And we always hear how ISIS is the richest terrorist group we've ever seen, and we know they sell antiquities. You know, they take these cities over
yes.
and all these historic treasures. They do. This is another way. I mean, this is right up in our alley.
They're doing credit card fraud right there.
And if they're doing it to people in Iran, don't you think they could do it here too?
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah. absolutely.
Please.
So
yeah.
I just thought that this was fascinating.
That's how they're funding it. That's really interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So I passed this on to my connection over at the Pentagon. He says, well, how do you know about this? I'm like, the way I always know. I poke around. I find things. This is what I do.
How do you know?
Yeah, how do I know?
They called me.
They by the way.
We were gossiping.
And, you know, like, we have a petition now. Go to change.org if you want Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook to stop broadcasting over to Libya, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria. So go to Davin's Den, the Facebook page. So check that out. So I thought that you guys would find that interesting.
Yeah, very.
Well, we got one more segment to do before we get out of here. You know, we all had imaginations as a kid. We don't have them anymore.
Nope.
But we're going to talk about how using one's imagination can be to a child's detriment.
Hmm. All
right? Sound interesting, right? You would think, how could that happen?
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Davin's Den, filling in for Coffee Talk. You are listening to Davin's Den, filling in for Coffee Talk. It has been a full show so far. We are almost done, but we could not leave without discussing this story, which came across my news feed the other day. It was about a child who used his imagination, and it did not go well for him. So I actually have the audio of the news report. So we're going to listen to that, and then we'll discuss this briefly, and then we'll get out of here. But you guys keep on listening, even after we're gone. Listen to the show afterwards.
At recess. Parents say he was shooting an imaginary bow and arrow.
That's right, imaginary here. Now, the school didn't comment on this punishment, but Nine on Your Side's TJ Parker shows us why the parents say administrators should really reconsider.
The six-year-old is serving his second day of suspension after an incident that happened here at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic School.
I don't see anything wrong with the way he was playing.
Matthew Mealy and his wife Martha got an unusual call saying their six-year-old son would need to serve a three-day suspension for playing with a pretend bow and arrow at recess.
My son has never had a discipline problem.
Matthew says his son was outside playing when a teacher saw what he was doing. She then brought it to the principal's attention. That's when Matthew's son was called to the principal's office.
He told the principal what he does is that I shot a bow and arrow. Was the sound effects he provided to it. And he returned to class that day.
He returned to class, but not for long. Matthew says the school has a zero tolerance policy towards any type of threatening gestures.
The punishment is so severe in this. It's hard as a parent to try and make this a teachable moment for our kid, so that we can move forward in a healthy manner.
Matthew says this should be a learning experience for the school. He says a six-year-old playing around with his friends is healthy. In no way did he have any malicious intent. Matthew and his wife say they'll keep him at Our Lady of Lourdes for now, but they're debating on whether or not they'll keep him there next year.
It's going to be very hard for the school to convince us to keep him in the school.
I reached out to school officials today. They declined to comment on camera, saying this issue involves a minor. TJ Parker, 9 on Your Side.
Fascinating. This kind of blows my mind. Correct me if I'm wrong, you guys. Now, I'm the one with the child, but still, you guys were in school. You were children. You know people who have children. I always thought that schools were supposed to encourage imagination.
They are supposed to encourage imagination. And another thing that's very disquieting on this is that they're saying that he was acting in a threatening manner. The child was playing, and it was Power Rangers. He was not acting in a threatening manner.
See, it's right. They say Power Rangers. I don't know if they said that in the video clip, but it was in the article.
Okay.
So the interesting thing is, if he goes, no, I'm practicing archery. Archery is a sport. Yeah. I mean, is that a threatening way?
No, it was not. He was not working in a threatening manner. Now, it's amazing the lack of common sense of these school administrators. It's amazing how in a place where, you know, they want to have tolerance, they're not tolerant themselves in the fact of putting common sense in the way, you know, in the course of child's play.
Now what happens if the other student who was pretending to get hit with this arrow actually complained? So, wow, he was making me uncomfortable.
Buckle up, Buttercup.
You know, I think in that case, if the other child complained,
yeah,
said, "Listen, this merely makes me feel uncomfortable." Yeah, buckle up, Buttercup. But you know what? You the teacher pulls the student aside. Go, listen. You can't do this. I understand you're playing. It makes him feel uncomfortable. Don't shoot your imaginary arrow at the kid.
Right. So that would be the answer for that scenario, and that's a very good answer.
Yeah.
But it's just they're overreacting with this.
Yeah.
The child was not acting in a threatening manner at all.
No, it's ridiculous.
And you know, and it's you can, and you can't even pull the child over because how do you explain? This is so ridiculous. How do you even explain this to a child? You can't do that. Why? I'm pretending to be a Power Ranger. Well, you're using a bow and arrow, but I'm a power. He's not acting in a threatening manner.
No, you're pretending a scaring little Henry.
Yeah.
All right, well, we all say you should allow imagination, but what happens if the imagination includes violence? I mean, you know, so, listen, still in my car to this day as a 41-year-old man. When I am in traffic, I will take my thumb and my two other fingers, and I will pretend to shoot people that are going too slow in front of me. I am using my imagination.
I still do the kids in the hall thing where I take my finger and my thumb, and I pretend to crash people's heads. I'm not really crushing heads.
But the thing about it is, he's not. You know, he's pretending to be something. You know, if it's a violent, it's not. It's what is shown on TV. It's no more violent than what is being shown on a child show on TV.
Well, right. Well, they're trying to get that. They're trying to sanitize everything.
But you know what? That's their agenda, and they're doing it. They're ruining their own cause. They're ruining. If there was a fight in there, or if the kid pushed another kid and then pretended to use his finger as a gun, that's a perfect example. You know what? You've got to be suspended. You need to learn about this. Wasn't even the case at all. The child was pretending to be a character on TV. A fictional character.
Now what happens if he was pretending to be Jesse James? And he was pretending, like, now he's pretending to be a bad character. He's not pretending to be a hero.
And going pow, pow, pow with his fingers? It's like, really, we're not allowed to use our fingers
but
in
I don't like
play
the way you
anymore?
I don't like the way you use your fingers.
The way I'm using it right now?
No, I don't like
no,
that.
No, I'm sorry.
I feel threatened.
You should. But the child should not. They know. Children understand the other kids playing.
But also, with the Jesse James thing, you don't suspend the child. You sit that you're a school, you're learning. You sit the child down and go, look, the character that you're pretending to be was not a good person. He shot innocent people. He robbed banks. He's not good. You teach. It's a school. You teach. You don't suspend them.
So we feel that there could be an opportunity to teach and correct.
Without a doubt.
If you're of that mind, but to suspend is a little beyond
the pale.
It was
a little bit overboard.
It's overreaching. Right. I think that the principal has a deep-seated fear of mimes. And that's what this is about.
Putting mime over matter.
Certainly.
How to do it.
Joe, time is drawing near to put this show to sleep.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be?
You check my website, joecurry.com, or my Joe Curry Nation on Facebook. I will be one of the Treehouse Clubs in Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I want to thank Paul Violas of the Security Brief for spending so much time with us doing a great interview. Paul, he's got a great show coming out. It's coming December 21st. It's when it's going to relaunch. They did a show over the summer. It was on cable. It was so good. Got syndicated. So you want to check your local networks for that December 21st. As always, check us out on davinsden.com for the full unedited version of the show. Go to the Davin's Den Facebook page where you can see the change.org petition. Follow us on Twitter. Guys, been a pleasure. As always, hanging out with filling in for the Coffee Talk. Joe, Pip, thank you guys.
Thanks.
For doing this. And we will see you soon. Right, Joe?
Yes.
We're going to come back?
Yes, we're going to be coming back a little bit. Yep, absolutely.
We're going to threaten them.
Yes, we're going to threaten on that.
With our little fingers in a little...
Put that down, woman! Put that down!
Pow, pow, pow!
Ow! Ow!
Pow!
I think we actually did that once on one of our older shows with
a
scammer.
She's armed and dangerous.
All right, guys. Thank you guys for hanging out. Enjoy the rest of the day. You are listening to Davin's Den.